In October of 2009, W.W. Norton and Company published an extraordinary book, a book wrapped in nearly a century of mystery, a legendary but unpublished work that, despite its import in history, had been seen and read by only a handful of people. The book is in the form of an illuminated manuscript. It's unlike anything penned in the modern age. A work completely without category or comparison. It contains a diary of visions, experienced and recorded by the author between the ends of about 1913 and 1916. With great artistic craft, employing antique illuminated calligraphic text and inks and stunning artwork, the author labored for 13 years transcribing the record of his experience into an elegant, folio-sized, red, leather-bound volume. The author of the book was, of course, Carl Gustav Jung. He called the book simply The Red Book. But it bore another title on its spine, embossed in golden letters: Liber Novus. In Latin, the new book, or perhaps also the book of the new. Throughout his life, the Red Book, Liber Novus, remained Jung's hidden treasure. Only a handful of Jung's closest students and disciples were allowed to examine it. After his death in 1961, his family refused all requests to view it. And when I say all requests, let me assure you, there were many. For the last several decades, it was locked away in a Swiss bank vault, unseen by anybody. To those people who valued Jung's work, read and studied his many volumes of writings, and even felt called to follow after him, dedicating their own lives to caring for the human soul, the Red Book was the mysterious missing fact. The missing fact at the center of Jung's work. It was the great unanswered question. As decades passed, many of us wondered if we would ever see the book. And then about 9 years ago, I first heard rumblings coming from Zurich indicating that the Jung family had finally decided to release the book for publication. And since that day, my own personal anticipation of this moment has been growing. I've talked to many others, and it was a general neurosis among Jung, Jungniks, Jungites, Jungians, this syndrome of anticipation of the Red Book. In October of last year, October of 2009, the book was released for publication. And the Philemon Foundation, which had sponsored the preparation, translation, and work involved in preparing the book for publication, held a series of events in New York City, which I was privileged to attend. It was perhaps one of the most impressive and joyous communal events I have ever witnessed. I could only compare the mood to you as similar to that at a great wedding. It was an extraordinary event. Okay, anticipation. Why was the book anticipated? Why was it thought to be so important? Why was its publication so longingly anticipated by students of C.G. Jung. There are four intricately related, interrelated reasons, and they play differently with different people. I think it's important to consider them, because they have indeed been at work in the history of Jung for more than a half century. The first reason is simply stated. Jung himself said the Red Book was important. It was the nucleus of his life's work. In his biographical memoir, Memories, Dreams, and Reflections, a book published shortly after Jung's death in 1961, and certainly the most widely read account of the man's life, Jung is quoted by Aniela Jaffe, and I quote, and these are Jung's words, "It has taken me virtually 45 years to distill within the vessel of my scientific work the things I experienced and wrote down at that time in the Red Book. As a young man, my goal had been to accomplish something in my science. But then I hit upon this stream of lava, and the heat of its fires reshaped my life." That was the primal stuff, which compelled me to work upon it. And my works are a more or less successful endeavor to incorporate this incandescent matter into the contemporary picture of the world. He said it again in these words, and I quote, "The years when I pursued the inner images were the most important time of my life. Everything else is to be derived from this. It began at that time. And the later details hardly matter anymore. My entire life consisted in elaborating what had burst forth from the unconscious and flooded me like an enigmatic stream and threatened to break me. That was the stuff and material for more than only one life. Everything later was merely the outer classification, the scientific elaboration, and the integration into life. But the numinous beginning, which contained everything, was then." Then. Over the last half century, a few critics have doubted these statements, been dubious of the authenticity of these statements of the old man. Others intuited that what he said was literally true. Either way, Jung's comments recorded late in life gave ample reason for great curiosity about the events which he cryptically referred to, and an abiding interest in the primary documentation of those events, which was supposed to be contained in the Red Book. Okay, the second reason for the anticipation is purely academic, prosaic. The Red Book was a crucial but long-concealed historical document from an important period in the life of a very influential man, one of the principal founders of modern psychology. The man had worked on the book for 15 years. But none of his past biographers had access to Jung's contemporaneous personal record of the events, documentation that runs to several thousand pages in manuscript, carefully recorded in his journals and in the mysterious Red Book. To write Jung's biography, to put him in his history, this material was crucial. Something quite powerful and transformative had happened to Jung between about 1913 and 1917, around the time of the Great War. Historians and biographers had struggled to explain exactly what that event was. Some called it a creative illness, a period of intense introspection. Others more maliciously called it an acute psychosis, a madness. But whatever they called it, however they described it, be it benign or malignant in intent, it was all supposition. No one really knew. They lacked documentary evidence to support their suppositions. The third reason for the anticipation, for the interest, is, aesthetic. The Red Book was rumored to be an amazing work of imaginative art, a singular visionary creation of the early 20th century. At least, that was the consensus opinion of those few people who had seen the book. And I now add, it's the almost immediate impression of modern readers who now have the opportunity to hold the book in their hands. Just turning the pages of the book without reading a line of the German manuscript can be a mind-altering experience. And here I should add another comment. Most of the few people to whom Jung showed the book during his lifetime probably only had a brief chance to peruse the book, maybe minutes, and probably never much more than an hour. They met the book in glimpses as a work of symbolic, imaginative art, and not as a complete, coherent text. Reading and studying the full text obviously requires days or weeks. Very, very few people had that opportunity. The exact number cannot be known, but it probably does not number more than about a dozen. After his death, of course, no one had access to read the book until about 13 years ago, when Dr. Sono Shamdasani began his critical editorial work on the manuscripts in preparation for its publication. The fourth reason for the anticipation, it's magical. Behind the longings and anticipations is a fact discreetly withheld from most public discussion. Nonetheless, in some circles of Jung's disciples, it should be known that the Red Book was legend to be, a prophetic document of incalculable importance. It's part of the story of the hidden Red Book, and this part of the story should also be told. Of course, many people in the now heterodox Jungian community will tell you that comments like this are silly projections. They're delusional. And they say Jung himself would have scoffed at such a suggestion. Notably included in this group are probably James Hillman and many other post-Jungians who have tried to remove Jung from his psychology. And I fully agree that to the spirit of our times, it is delusional, it's absurd and offensive to speak about prophets and prophetic books. But I assure you, it's a viewpoint that I have personally encountered and to which I therefore must add my personal witness. This is a part of Jung's history that must be distinguished from the textual, from the documentary history. It's better called a story instead of a history. But it was, and will now probably remain, part of the myth of C.G. Jung. A small group of people surrounding Jung in Zurich during his middle life people who often were in analysis with Hume, many of whom became themselves analysts, heard directly from Jung about his experiences, the experience behind the authorship, the writing, the creation of the Red Book. And some of those people perceived in him, sensed in him, thought about him, felt about him, intuited about him, that he was a prophetic figure. Now, whatever the word prophet means, dogmatically, theologically, philosophically, historically, in Jung, they met what they considered to be that fact. Jung, so it appeared to some of them, had endured an extraordinary, visionary event during the years when he was working on the Red Book. It had transformed him. His psychology was the result, and it was directed by the aspiration of helping others toward a somewhat similar transformative experience in their lives. This, again, was never an historical datum in the critical sense. It was simply the impression Jung left on human beings who knew him. And to some of those people, the Red Book was Jung's prophetic book. His magic book. And again, of course, many people who call themselves Jungians reject all this mumbo-jumbo out of hand, at least in their public statements. But others still sensed a truth lingering somewhere in the story, particularly if they had been personally touched by Jung, or touched by somebody who had been touched intensely by you. This is the mystery of the transmission of a charisma through human event, through human relationship. Okay, so in summary, a summary of the anticipations. In summary, the access to Jung's Red Book was anticipated, anxiously desired, longingly awaited over many decades for three easily understandable reasons. And by one magical intuition. Jung stated it was the key to his life work. It was a critical, undisclosed historical record. It was a signal work of imaginative art. And intuitively perceived, it might even be a prophetic book, a prophetic work, a work that might transform the spirit of our own time. Those anticipations and suppositions are now, however, past history. They're the memories and experiences of those of us who knew them. After a very long gestation, Liber Novus, the Red Book, has passed from the hands of C.G. Jung into our hands. The handwritten book is revealed. Now comes the time of judgment. The work of comprehension and the task of transformation. With this publication, ladies and gentlemen, the study of C.G. Jung and his psychology starts anew. This is the beginning. What was not supposed, not anticipated, at least by the publishers, W.W. Norton and Company, is that this very big and very strange and very, very expensive book would be of interest outside the rather limited circle of psychonuts, salivating with their fourfold neurotic Jung fixations and anticipations. And so Norton decided, cognizant of the economic conditions, to print just 5,000 copies. Well, that first printing sold out about 2 months before the release date in pre-publication sales. Because of the book's size and quality, it's printed on two different special types of paper. And these are oversized museum-quality papers with special inks. It's partially hand-bound, and all of this is done in Italy. It takes nearly 6 weeks or more to produce a printing of this book. This book is not and cannot be made into a mass production volume. So now, 3 months after release, the publishers are struggling to deliver a fifth printing. At most booksellers, the book is still backordered at least a couple of months. There have been essentially no shelf copies available anywhere in America in a bookstore. Nonetheless, despite that limited availability, in mid-December of 2009, the New York Times called it a breakout bestseller. What a surprise. Or then again, maybe not. Maybe not. And so, before I say anything more, meet the Red Book.
At this point in our lecture, we displayed the Red Book, page by page, on a large screen. Due to some technical difficulties, the remaining hour of this audio lecture was, however, lost. The subsequent lectures pick up with an introduction to the text of the Red Book. The introductory material that I presented in the rest of this lecture is actually supplementary and not necessary to the understanding of those subsequent lectures. So, join us for lecture 2. Thank you.